If you're forever trying to find the name of those chili seeds you sowed last year, or struggling to identify that incredible peperomia someone told you about, I have the answer. The new garden planner from The Green Conspiracy is the perfect one-stop shop for all your gardening notes. Its simple but smart template and drop-dead gorgeous style make this the notebook you'll want by your side as you plan your gardening, whether that's caring for your houseplants or growing a whole garden full of edibles. The Garden Planner is the work of two graphic designers who found growing plants was the perfect way to get away from their screens and the hustle and bustle of city life. But will it work for you? Well, The Green Conspiracy have been working on their planner for over a year, and they've tested prototypes on real gardeners, including me. So I just know you're going to love this notebook. Oh, and it doesn't matter where in the world you garden, because the planner is flexible enough to be used by gardeners in the northern and southern hemispheres. The Green Conspiracy's Kickstarter campaign is live right now and runs through until the 7th of March. So visit thegreenconspiracy.com to find out more and get your growing year started in style. This is On The Ledge, a safe space for houseplant people to admit, and I dare say revel in, their addiction. This week I'm talking to Scott Kane, a houseplant Instagrammer based in Perth, Australia, with not one but two barnstorming accounts. His personal account, Tropical Loco, in which Scott shows his enviably huge balcony filled with abundant foliage, monstras, agaves, staghorn ferns and more. And Boys with Plants, which pretty much does what it says on the tin. Pictures of boys with plants. And boy, is it popular. So popular that there's now a new book of the same name. I find out how the book came about, what it's like inspiring thousands of houseplant lovers on Instagram, and why lots of boys seem to like to tend their houseplants wearing only their pants. And I'll be answering a listener's question about a Monstera deliciosa that definitely hasn't taken part in dry January. Thanks to my new Patreons this week, Victoria, Marianne and Julia, who've started 2019 in style by pledging to make a regular donation to this here podcast. Just $5 a month grants you access to extra content and you get the inside track on what's going on the show, plus a warm fuzzy feeling that you're one of the wonderful folks who helps pay for stuff like microphones, travel expenses and hosting fees. And now, on with the business of the show. Let's hear from Scott of Tropical Oco about his houseplant haven in Australia.
Okay, my name is Scott Kane. I'm a freelance graphic designer in Perth, Western Australia, and I have an Instagram account called Tropical Loco, and I also have an Instagram account called Boys with Plants.
Oh, Scott, you are teasing me with your gorgeous pictures of summery Oz looking beautiful as we sit here in the UK in freezing temperatures. This is what I love about the world of podcasting, that it opens up all these different vistas to us. I don't know where to start because there's so many things I want to ask you. But you're clearly, I mean, I've just looked at your Instagram. You've got 46,000 followers on Tropical Oco. Tell us about how that all began. Are you like me? Have you been somebody who's been into plants since you were a little kid, or did it kick in a bit later?
I've always been into plants. I remember having a happy plant, a Dracaena, when I was a teenager. I think I was 12 or 13, and I had it in my bedroom, sitting on carpet. And I did see that the carpet was starting to rot underneath the pot plant, and I definitely kept the plant there so my mum wouldn't see that I was rotting the floor underneath.
Aww.
Because I wanted to keep the plant and enjoyed it so much. So I've always been around plants and always loved them. And actually, my mum has as well. So they've always been in the family, and I've always grown up with them. So definitely a part, always been a part of my life way before
they were fashionable. Well, you've really rung a bell with me there, because that's brought back a memory of me wrecking a carpet in my bedroom. And what my approach to it was when I sort of knocked over a plant and soil and water went all over the place, was just to put something, I just literally put something over it, thinking, oh, well, you know, nobody will notice. And my mum comes in and goes, what's that doing in the middle of the floor? I'm like,
oops.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm glad it's not just me. And now, several years, I'm looking at your profile picture now. I guess you're not a child anymore. You're a grown man,
that's
Scott.
True.
You've got your own place.
Yes. So, yeah, I moved into my two-bedroom apartment about, 11 years ago now. And it has a really huge balcony that extends over the car park. And above the balcony is some shade cloth and some sort of clear plastic, that hard clear plastic to protect for the weather. And so the lots of light comes in. And it really creates like a kind of greenhouse effect out there, and it's ideal for tropical plants and provides just enough bright indirect light, which we're always looking for the tropical plants. And as long as I give them plenty of water, they're very happy out there and grow really well. And having been here for 11 years, it's really been a fun project that started out with just a few plants to fill up some space to really taking over the whole front of my building.
And what do your neighbours make of it? Have you converted anyone to the cause of plants? Has anyone else started?
I have, actually. One of my neighbours has really great plants as well. She's doing really well, and we trade cuttings, which is fun. So there's a few that have done pretty well. Not quite my level, but they're getting there. And I'm hoping that it's inspiring them to go nuts with the plants as well.
Oh, that's really nice to hear. And the other string to your bow, or one of the other strings to your bow, is the Boys with Plants Instagram account. Tell us about that.
I met some great people through my plants Instagram, Tropical Loco, and I used to chat, you know, met some great friends through that, as you do, through the sort of plant community. And we used to chat a lot, and a friend of mine, James Ippi, who lives in Singapore, we used to chat, and actually I went and visited him in Singapore as well to check out his garden, and he took me around to the botanic gardens and whatnot. But we used to send each other pictures of other guys on Instagram with amazing plants. And at some point I sort of said, oh, that might make a good Instagram page, a little bit like, Hot Dudes Reading or something along those lines. And I thought, oh, see if I can put something together. And it kind of really took off. So that's how it started.
And now it has taken the leap into the world of publishing with a book that is coming out about when this interview is coming out, if it's not actually out already. Right. Publication dates seem to be a movable feast these days, which is exciting.
Yes.
Scrolling through the pictures, I just love this Instagram account because I have I know it's not a theory. I actually know that the majority of my listeners are female, and there's a stereotype that of the crazy plant lady, and that it's really just women who are into caring for plants. And clearly, looking at your Boys with Plants Instagram, that is not the case. Men of all types, shapes, sizes, ages, backgrounds are into plants.
Absolutely.
I think my favorite picture when I was scrolling through the other day and I saw, and I just loved it, was the guy. I think his Instagram handle is Dan SYC with the Xanthosoma elephant ear. It just makes me laugh because the leaf is enormous and he's got his head poking through the top of the leaf and he's kind of cuddling this leaf. And I can imagine doing exactly the same if I ever came across a leaf that big. There's a great combination of kind of seriousness, some serious bodies, seriously fit bodies in here, but also a good sense of humour that a lot of these guys have got.
Yeah.
Do you find now that people are just sending you, like, please, please, can you feature me, and sending you stuff out of the blue, as well as people you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. 99% of it are new images or images that have want me to post the pictures. When I started the page, I also started using the hashtag Boys and Plants. I think maybe, well, there were less than 100 people that used it before I started using it. So it's very much become, if people use the hashtag Boys of the Plants, they're kind of asking me to post their picture on the page. Mm-hmm. So, and also I get loads of DMs every day, and also get tagged in lots of pictures every day, for people saying, please, please post my picture. So I try to make it really clear for them though, because I have have some tips for them to follow, so that they can, get some images take some images if that's what they want to do. So that it's quite clear what I'm looking for. So,
yeah, and I mean, one thing that strikes me is I never knew so many men gardened in their pants.
Well, I have a theory.
Sorry, I should.
Yeah,
I guess a lot of these are tropical plants. It's probably quite warm. I can imagine that's why they just have to strip down. But
I'm sure it's not because their photos, the cameras come out, and they just want to pose a little bit. But.
Well, you know, like, I guess, you know, if you've got an awesome body, then, you know, there's no reason not to show it off. I'm not being prudish about this. It's one of the most agreeable Instagram accounts to scroll through, I have to say. It's every photo is a pleasure. And through this, you must have met so many different interesting plant people. Can you pick out two or three that are people that you've met that you've ended up becoming friends with, or you've just learned something new from?
Yeah. One of the guys that's actually in my book Jan K. He's written in the book. He's from he lives in Bogota, Colombia, but he's actually Czech. His Instagram is Home by Fausner. I guess that's how you say it. I've always read it. And he just, I think moving to Colombia, he was interested in plants anyway, but just being around the amazing environment and the garden and all the tropical plants, he's just gone. He's just gathered so many amazing plants and photographed them so beautifully, and his interior is just amazing, and he's definitely one that I think is worth checking out, that's for sure.
Yeah, I know his account. Yeah. I've definitely come across him before, and he's got an amazing collection of plants.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the lovely thing that you get from this account, is just that there are people in every corner of the world, from Turkey to Iran to Colombia to the North America, to South America. This is a worldwide thing now, right? I mean, it's very exciting to see that people are really rediscovering plants as a wonderful thing.
Absolutely.
Do you think the men are going to catch up? Do you think that the numbers of men into plants is going to catch up with the stereotypical, this is all a woman's game?
Good question. I don't know. I think that women will probably continue being ahead a little bit in that way, but there's definitely been more and more of an interest at the moment, partly through the worldwide trends. And I think also men, I think, are more comfortable with just enjoying what they enjoy now as well. I think they're more, they feel more open to express themselves the way they really, truly feel they want to, rather than, you know, feeling like they can't express themselves because it's too, maybe considered too feminine or you know, that sort of thing. So I think maybe that's part of it as well. But remains to be seen, really, doesn't it? It depends on how long the trend keeps going for as well. I mean, it seems to be going bigger and bigger, but, you know, the way trends go sometimes, we could turn around next year and people are not interested in plants at all anymore. Who knows?
Well, yeah, who knows? I mean, I really hope that doesn't happen, but it will be interesting to see how this develops. And Tell me a little bit about Australian houseplant culture. I often wonder, you know, I was looking the other day and I reckon I've got about, you know, a few thousand listeners in Australia. Mm. And I often think to myself, gosh, I really don't cater for those listeners very much, in that it must be frustrating when I'm talking about, oh, it's freezing here, I'm getting my plants ready for winter, and you guys are basking in the sunshine. Does it ever feel like annoying that so much gardening coverage outside of your own country is biased towards the Northern Hemisphere?
Particularly because your podcast is so... so much about cold and hot as well. We don't get that so much because even in winter here, it's still relatively warm. We can still leave our plants outside. We don't, well, it's particularly in Perth, Western Australia, we don't get any snow or any frost. So, and some of our tropical plants grow the best in winter because they get the extra rain. So, you know, there's definitely some tips that we don't need to follow here. But obviously the general kind of information is still useful, and there's also other times where we can sort of listen to the podcast 6 months out. We can always go back to the old previous sure. shows and listen to them then. So there's always that as well. So, but I think in Australia, quarantine is really important here. So there's a lot of the times I see plants and I just wish that I could get one, and you know, that they're definitely on my list, but there's just no chance here because it makes it very difficult because of quarantine or rules about whether plants can come into the country. So that's the one area that I sometimes wish I could go shopping in or get, you know, online shopping and have them sent down here, but we just can't do that.
Mm. Yeah, because I remember back in the episode where I talked to Dan Torre, who's, I can't think which Australian city he's based in, but he wrote a book about cacti called Cactus, history and sort of cultural aspects of cacti. And I remember him saying that, you know, lots of cacti were banned in Australia for many years because of worries about invasive species, which is understandable. Obviously that's a big concern about overwhelming the native wildlife, which is not so much of a concern here. Generally on the whole, the things that we're going to grow inside would not survive 5 minutes outside in the whole of the year, so it's not so much of a problem.
I was just going to say the Opuntia, I think I'm saying it the right way, the Opuntia cactus, which is basically the prickly pear cactus, we see that quite commonly here, but that is considered a weed here. And if you ever try to go onto a Facebook page where people are trying to sell houseplants and they put one of those cactuses up, it doesn't take long before lots and lots of people say, "These are weeds, you're not allowed to sell these, you have to destroy it." So it makes it makes it pretty hard to exchange those types of things as well, because they do spread very easily here. That's right.
Looking at your pictures of your balcony, which is gorgeous. One of the great things I imagine about this structure is you've got all these beams from which you can hang stuff, and you've taken full advantage of that. Tell me about some of the hanging stuff you've got there. I can spy some. Is that Ripsalis?
Yeah. I have quite a few different types of
possibly
Ripsalis.
Some epiphyllums there.
I have some different types of Ripsalis. I have some of the sort of fishbone fern, which I really like, and lots of those sort of kind of soft leaved cactus type plants. I have some different philodendrons and peperomia. I'm sitting inside here. I should go and wander around on my balcony to have a look and tell you exactly what I see. But I have some different ferns and some different monstera as well. The vine type ones. I quite like the kind of succulents, the hanging pot succulents as well.
Give me your secret top tips for watering, because I do struggle with hanging plants, it has to be said. You know, I'm quite mean with the watering can, which is usually good, but sometimes that goes a little bit too far. I guess, can you, like, are you worried about, what's your flooring? Do you need to worry about water dripping?
Not at all.
How do you water all these hanging containers?
Just with a hose. That's having so many plants. That's what makes it easy, having that many plants outside, because I just get the hose out, and then I sort of squash the hose a little bit so that I can give the plants that don't need very much water just a quick little squirt, and then I can give the plants that need lots of water a really good soak. And I really try and, or depending on the plant, but I usually try and soak the leaves and wash, you know, especially the philodendrons, lots of really wash those leaves and stuff and whatnot as well. And because I'm watering above, a lot of the water runs through to the plants below as well. So a lot of the water gets sort of recycled through the pots as I water them. But being outside and being on concrete, I can be pretty rough with the water. It's no problem. And I'm a little bit, I don't even my windows, sometimes I get them a little bit wet too, but I prefer watering my plants properly than having perfectly pristine, clean windows. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I think, you know, that's the wonder of having that balcony space out there, which is a threshold between outdoors and indoors, isn't it? And you can use it in lots of different ways. And I believe you work from home, so this must be really nice to be able to go out there. Definitely. And although, how do you get any work done though, Scott?
That's the problem, isn't it? It's very tempting to go out and have a good wander around and pick some leaves and you know, sweep up. And sometimes when I'm particularly looking for a nice distraction, that's when I go out and take photos for my Instagram, because that always involves sort of sweeping up a few extra dead leaves and sometimes moving a few pots around just to make the picture a little bit more pretty.
Yeah, I think that's I know that feeling. You sort of think, I'm just going to spend 5 minutes just tiddling with this, and then the whole afternoon's gone. And you think, oh damn!
Exactly.
I was meant to be doing
some
work.
That's right.
and your monsteras, or monstrous, however we decide to pronounce it, are a big feature.
Yeah.
How many have you got, and what are the different? Are they all plain ones, or have you? I think you've got a variegated one or two, haven't you?
I do have a variegated one. It's quite a big variegated. Borsigniana, am I saying that right? Monstera.
Uh-huh.
The one that isn't Delicchiosa that you see around.
You.
And that one's growing really quite well, actually. And then I have a really big Delicchiosa as well. That was one that I got actually before I even moved into this apartment, so it's probably about 12 or 13 years old now. And at one point I had completely ignored it, and I was renovating my kitchen actually, and I had all my furniture out on my balcony, so my plants kind of got ignored and it really suffered. And so I ended up chopping the long leafy bits off and replanting them, and that's why it's quite a compact plant with really big leaves, because it's actually quite mature. It just happens to be more compact than most of them, so that one's growing, that looks particularly good in photos, that's for sure. And then I have a few.
Yeah, you know, when you get those extra holes right by the midrib of the leaf, that you've got the really mature leaves, look amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that's an exciting, an exciting moment. And I think those plants are, gosh, I would love to know whether, how old people, I imagine there's some people who had monsteras in the 70s who still got them, who've just kept them smallish by hacking away at them.
Well, because they can grow outside here, so as long as they're kept in the shade, occasionally you'll go into sort of a nana's garden and wander around and look at the back of the garden outside, and under a really shaded area you see these huge monstera leaves, and often we see fruit on them as well. And they've just been ignored and left, basically watered by the lawn when the lawn gets watered, I think, and they just go nuts. But as they do need the shade, though. They still our sun is much too hot for them here. So as long as they've gotten shade and a little bit of water, they manage to survive outside here. So.
Do you when you're looking at your Instagram account, obviously, and other people, there's, you know, 46,000 people looking at your personal Instagram, do you ever kind of worry that people are kind of thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to do that, and buying tons of plants, and then it all goes pear-shaped because they haven't backed that up with any kind of research about what they're buying? That Instagram gives a kind of a false impression of what's possible to somebody who's a newbie.
Yeah. I hope that it just inspires them. I hope that they look at it and are inspired and Yeah, I would hope that they wouldn't buy them all at once, but I think probably they would learn the hard way and and wouldn't continue, or maybe they'd learn quickly and end up doing well.
I think I guess that's how you learn as well, isn't it? How you learn is by making those kind of mistakes, and you go and buy another one and you try to treat it better. Ultimately. I think Instagram is equally an educational tool as it is a, look at the pretty plants thing. You know, I think a lot of people are gaining a lot of information from Instagram and learning about plants in a way that possibly they wouldn't do. I mean, much as there are fantastic houseplant books out there, some people are never going to be looking at books to learn stuff. So
that's true.
Let's hope that, you know, your Instagram is a force for good in this world.
I hope so too. For me, I think it's part of bringing helping bring community together as well. So I think that it's such a nice way to speak to people, and especially now that since Instagram has stories as well, it's really a great conversation starter. So you'll see somebody's story, and often, I do this as well. I don't really put sad-looking plants on my Instagram page, but I will put them in my story, and I'll say, "Oh, look, this one's dying. What can I do to fix this one?" And it really, really starts a great conversation, and it's a really good way to learn as well.
Yeah,
so I think that's really helped start a kind of community.
Yeah, I think that's true. I often find myself putting random things on my Instagram stories and then getting interesting responses back from people saying, "Oh, have you thought about this? Or perhaps it's this." And then, it is a great way to learn and to pass on information. It is a valuable thing. Now, let's see what my next question was. So we've talked about monsteras. Are they your favourite plant to grow, or is there anything else that you just couldn't be without on your balcony?
I think my monstera are my favourite plants to photograph. And I guess they are my favourite to grow, although, to be honest, they don't really take very much care whatsoever. I sort of have a spot that they grow really well, and they just do their thing, I guess they are my favourite to grow, because they're just super low care, which is good for me. It looks like there's a lot of time and effort on my balcony, and some you know, I can spend a day on my balcony once a month, which, you know, actually isn't that much time and care. It's just built up slowly over time, so I think that's probably the case.
And are there any plants that, given what you were saying about Australia's restrictions on imports, are there any plants that you're still on your wish list that you just haven't been able to get hold of?
I'd really love a black, is it called Raven ZZ plant? Black ZZ plant? ZZ plant. Yeah, I would really love one of those. I haven't seen those here at all. Although we have the regular type of ZZ plant, so I imagine somebody probably would be allowed to import it here, but I haven't seen it here. That's definitely one that I'd like, that would be on my wish list.
Oh, okay.
It's another one that's not a lot of care, but shouldn't be a lot of care, I imagine, if it's like the regular ZZ plant. But
no. Really cool. Well, that's interesting. I've got four, not that I'm going to send you one, Scott, because I think it would probably die in the post and get seized at customs. But I have four raven leaflets that I've been propagating from a stem that somebody sent me.
Nice.
And but it's very slow because they have to the bottom of the leaflet starts to swell and turn into a little rhizome, and then it's that roots. So it's a long road, I've already got a waiting list of people who want them.
So they're as much in demand in the UK as they are here then.
Yeah, I mean, they are popular, and I can see why. I think the foliage is attractive. I think a lot of people don't realise that it starts out pale green and then it darkens as it ages. So.
Okay.
The individual fronds kind of look kind of interesting as they grow.
Yeah.
I think the trouble with really dark leaf plants is they can sort of fade into the background. So you kind of got to put them with something that I got this vision of growing a raven with something like the lime zinger philodendron to have a real contrast.
Yes.
But I haven't got one of those, so... I like and my raven plant is about four centimeters. So,
okay. I like the idea. Could of take putting, a while. Putting all the dark colored ones together as well. So, I've got a colocasia. What's that one with really black leaves? A begonia that's sort of got black silver leaves as well. So I think that sort of photographing them anyway with all together with all the black leaves can look really good too. Mm.
I believe your profession is in design, so this must be why all your pictures have are beautifully shot and staged, in that you've got an eye for different leaf combinations and colours and textures.
I really enjoy that, and matching pots to put to the plants as well. I really enjoy that. So I find it's kind of a creative outlet that's completely separate from my creative job, which is, you know, sitting on a computer 99% of the time. So it's nice to go outside and use my visual eye to match things and put things together and then compose photos for them and that sort of thing. And it's just nice to do something that's separate from a computer but still creative.
One plant that keeps catching my eye in your photographs is an agave, and I don't know which agave it is, but it's kind of got soft green, it doesn't look very spiky, perhaps it is spiky. Yeah. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
I do know the one I'm actually talking about. I'd love to be able to say what the Latin name for it is, but I'm not very good at Latin names. But it's one that I've had for years, actually, years and years. I might have had it for 15. I've had it for a really long time. It was a friend of mine's, and she collected it as a little pup. And although it's not that big, what I do every time when it grows quite long, I just saw the bottom of it off. And then pull the root ball out, throw that away, put in new soil, and stick it back in a pot, and it grows beautifully again. So I've done that about four or five times now. So if I'd left it, it would probably be as tall as the roof. But it sort of loses its leaves underneath, so it gets sort of long and trunky. So that's why I do that.
Another plant I wanted to ask you about was your cardboard palm, Zamia furfuracea. Mm-hmm. I'm growing these from seed, so I wondered, are they easy? Am I going to struggle
slow.
Once it gets
slow?
Okay.
Super slow growing, and I find they just put out new. So actually, just in the last 2 weeks, I have two cycads, and both of them have just put out new leaves just in the last couple of weeks, but they tend to not do anything for most of the year, and then they'll put all their leaves out at once. So that's what I found with mine anyway. And also I put mine in full sun, pretty much in full sun. I that cardboard palm that you're talking about, I had it in the shade earlier, and it grew really long with tiny little leaves on the tips of it. So I would wonder if maybe it wouldn't be enough light indoors in the UK. Mm. But you might have to put lots of grow lights around it, perhaps.
yeah, that could be the answer. Yeah. Well, I'm growing them from seed. I mean, when I looked at the packet, it said germination can take several months. So I was like, okay.
And how long has it been?
So they've only been in the seed tray for like 2 weeks, so nothing so far. But it's an interesting experiment. I like to try growing. And if it doesn't work, it's kind of £3 I've wasted.
That's
so
right.
You know, it's not the end of the world.
Definitely.
You don't need to grow anything from seed though, because it looks like you've got maxed out here.
I'm pretty I take some cuttings. I give cuttings to friends. But I've kind of, my plant goal for 2019 is actually not to buy any more plants. It's hard to do sometimes, but I'm trying to just keep the plants that I've got beautiful and growing well. If they grow too big, to cut them back and give away some cuttings. And I think I've just about run out of space for new plants anyway, particularly new big plants.
And I'm liking your use of the hashtag Staghorn Saturday. I legendarily killed a staghorn by my beautiful staghorn because I've put it outside in a random spot that And then the weather got really unexpectedly frosty and I killed it. And I haven't been able to bear to buy another one. I wish I was in your climate because I could leave it outside all year round. Tell me about your, these plants. How many of these have you got? And they must grow really well in your climate.
Yeah, I've got a few different types. Although, you know, whenever you've got something that you really like, you're always looking to look at more different, interesting ones. Like in Asia, which is which I travel to a lot, so I've seen some of the ones there, and they look at the ones here in Australia look a little bit dry compared to those. But I must have about four or five different staghorns here. They just grow really well as sort of wall plants, and because I've got walls on three sides of my balcony, they just look really good and grow really well.
They're amazing. They're amazing plants. I will eventually go back into that, but I haven't been burnt. I've been frosted about. It's just a bit tragic. Yeah, I can't bear to go back in there right now.
Yeah.
That pretty much exhausts my list of questions, Scott. Is there anything else you wanted to tell me, or anything more about the book? Who's the book aimed at? Is it just your loyal band of listeners, or are you trying to reach out beyond the sort of natural houseplant community with this?
I think that it will appeal to people who like plants, and I think it'll appeal to people who like guys. you can get plant tips in there, but if you just want to look at the pictures, that's perfectly fine too. Nobody's holding that against you. So I think that it's not particularly expensive, so it's a nice little, I think it's about £10 in the UK, $9.99 or something. So as an extra little gift, I think people might sort of throw it in, and I think that people who just think it's a bit funny. I know I heard of a friend that received it, not knowing that I was behind it, I should say, received it because he always kills plants. And so a friend of his gave it to him, and he's like, and gave it to him to sort of encourage him to learn how to grow plants. And also it was a bit of a joke, which was kind of funny. I think anyone who likes plants or guys will enjoy the book.
Yeah, and I think there's so many great houseplant books coming out at the minute that, you know, it's really nice to see that the houseplants are being embraced by the publishing industry. Although I did get told by a publisher recently that houseplants were overexposed in publishing right now. I was like, okay. But surely that's just that's a good thing. But the publisher, I guess, is always looking for the new and upcoming trend as opposed to the established trend. So,
this book was first talked about sort of over a year and a half ago, I think, just about. So it does take a long time for it to go from being discussed to actually coming out and being available to buy. So I can see how they're always looking for the thing that's going to be popular next year. Fortunately, houseplants are popular this year for me.
Well, I'm loving the way that your two Instagram accounts are going, and they bring me a lot of joy on a daily basis. So thank you very much for all your beautiful pictures, Scott Kane. Thanks so much to Scott. You can find details of the plants we've talked about and his book Boys with Plants in my show notes at janeperrone.com. Many thanks to my sponsors this week, The Green Conspiracy. Please do check out their website, thegreenconspiracy.com, to support their Garden Planner Kickstarter. Let's turn to question of the week, which comes from Harry this week. Harry contacted me with a problem about his Monstera deliciosa. He's found that his plant is making new leaves aplenty, but it takes ages for the leaves to unfurl. Sometimes, he says, the leaves develop brown patches while they're unfurling despite not being in the path of any direct sunlight. Perhaps you could shed some light on this conundrum. And Harry has helpfully sent along some images of his troublesome leaves. Always worth doing if you've got an inquiry for On the Ledge. And indeed, one of them does look very miserable. It's partially unfurled, it's got yellow splotches on it, and in one corner it's gone brown completely, so not looking in a good way. I'd love to say that this is a nice, easy, cut and dried case, but unfortunately it is indeed a conundrum, Harry, because there are so many different reasons why a monstrous leaves can do this. These kind of problems are incredibly difficult to diagnose. There could be half a dozen different causes of this problem. Overwatering, underwatering, too much light, too little light, drafts, the list just goes on. But I would be pretty confident that I could put my finger on one of the causes, Harry, and it's most likely to be overwatering at this time of year, because it's very, very tempting to keep sloshing with the watering can. But really, Monstera Deliciosa can afford to dry out quite significantly at this time of year before you give it any water. I mentioned in the Gadgets episode my Soil Sleuth, which I have now taken delivery of, and this really is an excellent tool to use if you're worried about the moisture of your soil. I used it on my Aspidistra the other day, and while I thought that the soil was completely dry, when I actually burrowed it down into the soil and brought up these miniature soil samples using the little notches in the stick of the Soil Sleuth, I realised that actually the plant was quite moist around the roots, so I didn't need to water. So do check your Monstera carefully before you water at this time of year. If you don't happen to own a Soil Sleuth like me, then you can just make your own testing gadget using a wooden chopstick and stick that into the soil for a few minutes and see if it comes out damp. The other thing to say about Monsteras is they are hungry plants, and you will get the odd leaf turning yellow if the plant isn't getting fed enough. Even in winter, the plant will be putting on some growth and, in my opinion, will still require some feeding throughout the winter. I give mine a sort of a half dose of feed every couple of weeks, which seems to keep it ticking over. So that's something else to consider, Harry. If you've never fed your plant, then maybe give it a very dilute dose of houseplant fertiliser, then start feeding it the full dose once spring arrives. So, Harry, I would remove those very damaged leaves, take the plant out of the pot and check for any root rot, any slimy brown roots, and remove those, and if necessary, pot it up into fresh compost. But it may just be that you've caught it in time and no root rot set in. You just need to cut back on that watering to make sure your plant survives and indeed thrives. And further to Harry's comment about the speed at which Monstera leaves emerge, Monstera leaves do unfold pretty slowly. It can take anything from a few days to a few weeks from a leaf to go from a tightly furled young leaf to a fully formed adult leaf. So you do have to have a bit of a patience game going on here with these. Harry, do let me know how your plant gets on. And if anyone else has a question for On The Ledge, drop me a line, ontheledgepodcast@gmail.com. I always love to hear from you. That's all for this week. I'm taking next week off because, well, quite frankly, it's my birthday. So no show on the 15th of February. I'll be back leafy and loud on the 22nd. In the meantime, please do join houseplant fans of On The Ledge on Facebook, where you can continue the planty conversations to your heart's content. But that's all for me this week. I'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye! The music you heard in this week's episode was Roll Jordan Roll by the Joy Drops, An Instrument, The Boy Called Happy Day Gakana by Samuel Corwin, and Overthrown by Josh Woodward. The ad music you heard is Dill Pickles by the Heftone Banjo Orchestra. All the music in this week's show is licensed under Creative Commons. See my show notes at janeperone.com for details.